All right, let's dive right in, shall we? Today, we're going deep on accomplice testimony.
Oh, yeah, accomplice testimony. That's a fun one.
Yeah, it is. And it's especially relevant for all of our listeners out there in the legal world.
You know what's really interesting is we're going way back to 1968 for this one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, with State v. Helmenstein, a North Dakota Supreme Court case that, you know, still has relevance today.
Absolutely. This case, it really shows how the word of your friends can come back to bite you, especially if those friends were involved in a crime with you. Like, imagine hanging out with your buddies, things get a little out of hand, and suddenly you're facing charges because your friends are pointing fingers.
Yeah, and that's where things get really tricky, legally speaking, because North Dakota has this fascinating rule about accomplice testimony.
Right.
Basically says you can't be convicted solely on the word of people who are also involved in the crime.
So there has to be more to it than just your buddy saying, yeah, he did it.
Exactly. There has to be some other evidence, something independent that connects you to the crime.
So let's paint a picture for our listeners. Put them right there in the hot seat.
Okay.
You're Virgil Helmenstein, the guy at the center of this case.
All right.
You're out with your friends. One of them is Glenn Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
They decide to burglarize a grocery store. You know, the classic stuff. Beer, cigarettes, candy. And get this, bananas.
Bananas. Got to have those potassium levels up for a night of crime, I guess.
Right. So the state was initially relying heavily on what the other young people involved were saying.
Yeah, claiming they were just witnesses. But the big question was, were they really? Or were they accomplices?
And just so we're all on the same page, an accomplice is anyone involved in the crime, right? It's not just the person doing the actual breaking and entering.
Exactly. Even if someone like Zahn was just hanging back or even claiming to be asleep in the car, if they were part of the planning or knew about it beforehand, they're considered an accomplice under the law.
So their word alone can't be used to convict someone?
Nope, not on its own.
So initially, the trial court thought Zahn wasn't an accomplice because he claimed to be asleep in the car during the actual break-in.
Oh, interesting.
But the Supreme Court, they saw things a bit differently.
Yeah, how so?
Well, they realized that Zahn was more involved than he let on. Remember those bananas? He specifically asked for them to be stolen.
Uh-huh. So he wasn't just snoozing through the whole thing.
Nope. And that seemingly small detail about the bananas, wanting those specific stolen items, that was actually a key piece of the puzzle.
Wow. Okay. So he's asking for specific loot that definitely makes him more involved than just a bystander.
Right. So how did this affect Helmenstein? Did his friend's desire for bananas end up sending him to jail?
Well, because Zahn helped plan the burglary, the Supreme Court said, yeah, he's an accomplice.
Okay.
Which means his testimony couldn't be the only thing used to convict Helmenstein. Remember that North Dakota rule?
Yeah, you need independent evidence to back up what the accomplice is saying.
Yes.
So was there any other evidence linking Helmenstein to the crime besides what his friends, now considered accomplices, were saying?
Well, that's the catch. The only other evidence came from the store owner who confirmed, yep, there was a break-in, but couldn't actually identify who was involved.
Huh. So no fingerprints, no security footage, nothing like that.
Not in this case.
Okay, so we've got this legal thriller unfolding. Zahn asking for bananas gets him labeled an accomplice. And suddenly the whole case against Helmenstein is on shaky ground.
Right.
What happened next? Did the Supreme Court let him walk?
They did. They overturned his conviction.
Wow.
Because with Zahn now officially an accomplice, the only evidence tying Helmenstein to the crime was the word of his friends. And remember, in North Dakota, that's not enough.
So even though multiple people pointed the finger at Helmenstein, it wasn't enough to convict him.
Exactly. The fact that they were all accomplices meant their testimony had to be viewed with a lot of skepticism, and that's why this case is so important. It highlights how relying solely on accomplice testimony can be really unreliable.
And this case has had such a lasting impact. It seems like it's a cornerstone of how we think about accomplice testimony even today.
Oh, absolutely.
But we'll dive into that more after a quick break.
You know, when you really think about it, this Helmenstein case, it really highlights something super important about our justice system.
Oh, what's that?
The whole idea of innocent until proven guilty, you know?
Right.
The prosecution they have to actually prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt in accomplice testimony, well, if there's nothing else to back it up, it's just not enough.
So it's like a safeguard against being convicted just because someone might have it out for you or is trying to save their own skin.
Exactly. Accomplices, they could have all sorts of reasons for pointing the finger. Maybe they're hoping for a lighter sentence.
Right.
Or they want to shift the blame. Or who knows, maybe there's even some personal vendetta going on.
Yeah, you never really know what's going on behind the scenes, do you?
Nope. And that's why the law says, hey, we need more than just their word. We need some solid evidence to back it up.
It makes you wonder, though, about all those past cases that may be hinged on shaky accomplice testimony. You know, before these rules were really hammered out.
Yeah, it's a bit unsettling to think about.
Definitely gives you pause, but okay, back to Helmenstein for a sec. We talked about needing that independent corroboration, but what does that actually look like in practice? What kind of evidence could have saved the state's case against him?
Well, think about it, like fingerprints at the scene or DNA evidence, you know, something concrete that puts him there regardless of what his friends are saying.
Ah, okay, so like physical proof.
Exactly, or maybe there's security camera footage showing him lurking around the grocery store that night, you know, something like that.
So it doesn't have to be some super dramatic smoking gun type of evidence.
Right, even something small could be enough to tip the scales.
It really makes you think about how all those little details matter.
Absolutely. Even a text message from Helmenstein to his friends talking about the plan, you know, or bragging about the loot afterwards.
Right.
That could have been enough to corroborate the story.
And that actually brings up a really interesting point, because today we live in this digital world where we're constantly leaving these digital trails everywhere we go.
That's true.
I mean, could those digital footprints actually play a role in corroborating or even challenging accomplice testimony nowadays?
Ah, oh, that's a great question. And it's something that courts are dealing with more and more these days.
Like a whole new frontier of evidence, isn't it?
It is.
Think about all those social media posts, text messages, location data from our phones. It's all out there.
Yeah, and it could all potentially be used as evidence, you know, just like those fingerprints or security footage we were talking about.
It's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it?
No, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a game changer for law enforcement. It gives them a lot more to work with, but it also means criminals might be leaving behind a lot more evidence than they realize.
So for anyone out there thinking about a career in law, this case really highlights how important it is to stay up to date on all the latest technology and how it intersects with legal stuff.
Absolutely. Because what might seem like some random text message today could end up being a key piece of evidence in a case tomorrow.
And that's where having a sharp legal mind comes in.
For sure. Okay. You need to be able to analyze all this new information and figure out how it fits into the bigger picture.
All right, so let's shift gears a bit. Helmenstein was decided back in 68, but we're still talking about it today, obviously.
Yeah.
So can you give us some examples of how this case has shaped legal practice and set precedents for other cases dealing with accomplice testimony?
Well, Helmenstein, it's kind of become this cornerstone for challenging accomplice testimony, you know? Defense attorneys, they use it all the time when they're arguing that the prosecution's case is too reliant on what potentially biased people are saying.
So it's not just some dusty old case from the past?
No, it's still very much alive and well in courtrooms all across the country.
Wow, it's being used to protect the rights of the accused. That's pretty amazing.
It is, and it's also led to a lot of jurisdictions actually adopting specific rules about accomplice testimony, you know, to make sure things are fair.
Interesting.
Some states have even gone further than North Dakota, requiring corroborating evidence in every single case that involves accomplice testimony.
Wow. So this one case from North Dakota had quite the ripple effect, huh?
Oh, absolutely. It really shows you how important legal precedent is and how a single court decision can impact so many lives.
It's like a chain reaction.
It is, and it's a testament to how powerful a well-crafted legal argument can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So for all you aspiring lawyers out there, even those seemingly obscure cases from way back when, they can still have a huge impact on the law we practice today.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Before we wrap things up, I want to bring it back to our listeners. You know, what's the one key takeaway, the nugget of wisdom you want everyone to walk away with after this deep dive into accomplice testimony?
That's a good question. You know, I think if there's one thing I really want our listeners to remember, it's that knowledge is power.
Oh, I like that.
Whether you're a lawyer, a law student, or just someone who's fascinated by the legal world, understanding your rights and how the system works and, you know, how cases like Helmenstein actually shape legal precedent, it's all incredibly valuable.
It's like having that little extra bit of insight that can make all the difference.
Exactly. Especially if you ever find yourself in a situation where accomplice testimony is involved.
Right, because it can get really complicated.
It can. And, you know, just being aware of how to analyze evidence and spot potential weaknesses and understand all those nuances of legal arguments, it can really help you navigate those tricky situations.
This case really drives home the point that even a decision from decades ago can still have a huge impact today.
Absolutely. Hellmanstein, it's like a reminder that while the law is constantly evolving, some of those core principles, like the presumption of innocence and the need for solid evidence to back up accusations, those things, they stay with us.
It's amazing how a case about some stolen snacks and a craving for bananas could have such a lasting impact on our legal system.
You know, it just goes to show you never know where you'll find those pivotal legal precedents that end up shaping the way we understand and practice law.
That's so true. And for all our listeners out there, keep that curiosity alive, keep learning, and never underestimate the power of a good legal deep dive.
Well said. And who knows, maybe one of our listeners will be the one to uncover the next Hellmanstein, you know, the case that changes the legal landscape for future generations.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? But for now, thanks for joining us on this exploration of accomplice testimony. It's been a real pleasure diving into this with you, and we'll catch you next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of law.